Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Welcome to Fireteam Chat at Gamescom. It is a very special edition. I'm here with Eric and Deej from Bungie. Thank
Those
you guys for joining.
In fact, our names.
I'm glad that the right people are here from Bungie. You guys were the best, so thank you for coming out.
I think we're the worst.
Well, depends on who you ask.
Remains to be seen. So this is a very special edition. We're going to open the show up, talk to you guys, have you hang out. Obviously, we're not going to be analyzing everything that came out this week with you guys sitting here. We'll do that after you leave behind your backs.
Oh, no.
But
we'll
no,
say all nice things, though, so it's cool.
Exactly. Lots of exciting stuff this week. But yeah, Destin and Sean will be joining just after this. But let's hop right into it. I actually wanted to, you know, there's a lot of questions, but I kind of wanted to take a different tone for a moment and reflect for a moment. It's been almost a year, right?
Mm-hmm. About 10 months.
Yeah. Getting very,
so
very
about nine now, yeah.
Yeah, very sorry. Close.
Went the wrong way. That's the jet lag kicking in.
Yeah, exactly.
11.
Yes. So just a little history lesson. How many people worked on year one on Destiny?
Oh, wow. How many people worked on year one?
So roughly.
The rough numbers are pretty tough because so I came off of ODST and Reach in 2010. We were about 150 people then. We moved into our new building. And people kind of rolled onto the project. So at different stages, different various stages, you had different amounts of people working on it. I think the number that we've put out there is like 500.
Wow.
Right? But mm-hmm. One of the unique things about Bungie is we have community people.
Yes.
We have our own localization team, mm-hmm. which most studios would use an agency for. We have about 150 QA testers, which normally would be a publisher resource, but we have them in-house.
Yeah.
Because we have this thing that we're rolling on. We don't
living,
have like
breathing
yeah,
game.
Yeah, like the way most games work, and the way it's worked in the past for us, like on Halo, is like you build this huge QA team to ship, right, in the months leading up, and then they all don't have anything to do after you ship for a while. And so you use an agency to fill those roles, and then they go to whatever, Nintendo, or they go to Microsoft.
Yeah.
You have these people that like you like and they're your friends and they're really good workers, but you lose them, right?
They're QA marauders.
Yeah,
sort of.
I mean, Destiny and like basically makes that go away for us. So a large part of that number are people who we typically wouldn't have had before in development.
That's amazing. I mean, that's bigger than a bunch of other game development teams just to QA it, but there's so much in this game, right?
Yeah. Yep. And there's so many people at Bungie, like you were saying, that do something that a lot of studios would outsource. You know, we have an entire team working on Bungie.net and the companion application instead of an external web dev firm.
Yeah,
we
like
have a motion capture team. We have people recording sound effects in our building. You know, everything is built from the ground up, from scratch, that goes into the game right in our studio. That puts us in a great position because if I go over and I have a conversation about, you know, some of the different ways in which we can support the forum conversation or clans or mobile tools, people can build that stuff right there in-house. They're players of the game. They understand the experience, so they can support it with their own efforts. You know, the sound effects are all, you know, made from scratch, you know, like a portion of your sparrow, you know, is the electric motor of, you know, Lorraine McLeese's Zero motorcycle. You know, so we're like, we're wheeling an electric motorcycle into the studio, and people are like, what are you doing? You can't bring that in here. It's like, we're making sound effects for a vehicle. Oh, awesome. By all means, then, you know, do that.
Creepy audio engineers in the dark dragging, like, knives across cantaloupes.
Right. Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Making sounds for the game.
Yeah. It's like, what'd you do today? I injected air into a mixture of cornstarch and water. It's like, that sounds gross. That first time you walk up the stairs, you know, and you hear that wet smacking sound of the hive, it's like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that would be a really interesting thing to talk about someday, some of the, like, sounds that have now become iconic as playing the game and what they really are.
Yeah. That wet smacking sound, that's the iconic sound?
Yeah, that's exactly.
That's it. The one everyone
always
remembers.
Remember that wet. Well, it's
smacking
to do with cornstarch, as far as I remember.
And, and compressed air.
But, yeah, I mean, that's a huge team, but I think that, you know, the players out there don't really realize that, you know.
Well,
like,
they,
we know there's
they,
a lot
they don't and shouldn't have to care, right?
Yeah,
it's like the whole games is hard to make narrative is like, who cares, right? Like, somebody gave us money, they want to have a fun experience at the end, right? Well, it's really hard, and making games is real hard,
right?
You know, of course it's fucking hard, right?
Yeah.
It's
but my point was that it's complex, you know, and it's sometimes
well,
all the time you guys make changes and immediately the feedback comes back is like, oh, weren't you thinking about this and what about that? But it seems fair to say there was a lot of people thinking about that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, obviously, we're trying to make stuff that we want to play, right? The goal from the very beginning, you know, all the way up to Jason was like, what kind of experiences don't exist that we wish did, right? Mm-hmm. What kind of, like, could we mix, you know, like a game where you spend a ton of hours playing, you know, a single player narrative experience where you gain a bunch of gear and loot and look like a total badass. But, like, wouldn't it be cool if, like, there was another person there? Like, you crest a hill and, like, there's somebody else. Or wouldn't it even be better if it was your friend, right?
Yeah.
And so those were, you know, big opportunities and big challenges, right? We've never done a game like this before.
Mm-hmm.
And so every single time we make a release, it's, like, both a look back on, like, you know, what did we do that we didn't enjoy? What can we lean into that we think is really working well? And how do we continue, like, building that both from our own perspective as players, as we're playing the shit out of it, and from, like, the community feedback, you know, like, how do we prioritize things? What are the right experiences? So, for me, it makes it super fun, because, like, I don't think anybody expected us to do, like, Trials or Prison.
Yeah.
We can, like, defy expectations and do just these really fun things that are built from fan feedback, right? People wanted, like, an end game for PvP, and they wanted better gear for PvP, and they wanted a, you know, they would say, like, hey, we'd like a survival mode or a firefight-like experience, and so we can drive off those things, but do them in a really different way.
Yeah. So that's a good segue into this. There's a theory out there, right, that the plan was set a long time ago, right? This was supposed to happen, and these are these expansions. Could you talk a little bit about that? Like, was House of Wolves, you know, something that really came out of feedback or development timelines, or had that been the plan for years?
I can actually wind it back, because I spent some time with the Dark Below team post-launch, right? And that was really hot on the heels of the first Destiny launch. And, like, Eris was conceived in a room after the game shipped. The storylines were up on the board and post-it notes, and the quest systems and the quests and the names and the writing and all those activities were things that were being actively worked on by a team apart from you know, the core Destiny experience, led by Ryan Ellis. Same is said for House of Wolves. I think House of Wolves had the benefit of some time, right, behind when we shipped and when we delivered it. And I think you can see that in both the product reflecting a lot more player feedback and just the scope and scale of what's there. And that's a credit to Christopher Barrett and his team who led it, who was the art director on the original project. But it's also a testament just having more time and having a better understanding of what people want.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think with a lot of things that happen in the development of Destiny, we have our own, and we, when I say, you know, the designers, the art directors, the creators, have their own inspirations, they have their own vision, but we also have an opportunity to react to the player. You know, we have an opportunity to say, this is something we always wanted to do. I've got a great idea for where we can take this adventure and how we can infuse it with new activities and new themes. But now that we know our audience like we do, wouldn't they love it if we did this? You know, so it really is a partnership. You know, they're a part of our creative process. Any entertainer needs to know their audience. They need to understand what's going to make them happy and serve them. And, you know, having a community as vocal as the Destiny community and having immediate access to them at all times, be it on our website or an external website or comments on shows like this, you know, it gives us perspective on how we can create something that will keep them playing and keep them entertained.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to the individual level too, right? Like the people building the content or playing the content. So like House of Wolves specifically, not only do we have the time, you know, to gauge feedback and react and build something that was really cool and really substantial. The art director, Christopher Barrett, like plays in a community clan, like in Team Rezo. His dad plays the game. His dad's like 73 and has like 334s. I don't know if you ever played with Chris, but he plays a ton of the game, right? So that also helps too, just like playing ourselves and understanding like what can we do here, like how can we make that better, and the narrative around like it's all on disc and we have this like long-term plan is not something we actively try to combat. But I think if you look at the path of development, it's pretty clear that that's not the case. Like Petrovenge didn't exist until we turned our eye towards House of Wolves, well after launch, right? And the concept art didn't even exist for her. And then you have I had another train of thought going, but the jet lag is kicking in.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's there's tons of work that goes into that content, and the team wants to make sure that we are reacting to feedback, providing really cool experiences. But it's always going to be a little bit ahead, right? It's always in this nature of the live game. We always have to like sort of use our best instincts, look at the data, look at what players are doing, and forecast a little bit forward.
So, you know, looking through now all your releases, everyone's got a raid except House of Wolves. Looking at what we dropped a legendary.
I did.
In the show. Looking for those of you just listening, by the way, they brought by these squishy stress
engrams. Get all your Fatebringer anger out.
That's right. Exactly.
Fatebringer.
They brought them by in the show, and they're really cool. But yeah, so House of Wolves didn't have a raid, but now everything else so far that we know of has it. Do you think Prison of Elders was enough, you know, to really satisfy the community? Does the data show that? I personally, like, the raids are so special.
Yeah.
And it really felt like it was maybe more of a, you know, experiment versus time that you guys had. But in other words, do you guys feel like each release should have a raid?
I mean,
if you could have your way.
Yeah, if I had a magic wand, I think that would be the case. The reality is like the creative director gets to set what goes into the project, and you know, we were reacting to a lot of end game feedback about giving players more variety, specifically you know, competitive multiplayer. Being able to bring something like Trials takes time and energy and resources. Making something like Prison of Elders was a direct reaction to some of the, hey, can we get some end game matchmaking stuff that isn't as intense and isn't as demanding as a raid?
Yeah.
And so there's always a balancing act with features. And like if you had and we do keep a community wish list, but if you had the real one, it would be like you'd need more notebooks.
Yeah.
Right? And so
big.
A lot of it is about just saying like, what can we make? What should we make? And how do we prioritize it? Raids are near and dear to our heart, and they also take a lot of time to get right? So the team is actively working on the next raid. They've been working on it for some time, and we want to make sure that when we do roll raids out, they are special, and they aren't something that we just like, well, we had to hit the date for the raid, so I guess it's not as good as it could have been, right?
Yeah.
So it's always a balancing act.
I think it's a benefit and a challenge, too, that every single release of Destiny so far has had something about it that's been unique. And I wouldn't want to get our community into this complacent routine where it's like, well, I know exactly what to expect from Destiny. Every single release for Destiny should have X, Y, and Z. You know, I think whatever mood we find them in, you know, wherever we find ourselves with the project, we want to be able to iterate and experiment and try different things. You know, does Prison of Elders stack up against a raid? You know, one-to-one, not necessarily, but if you add Trials of Osiris and if you add a lot of the extra cool stuff we did, like revisiting some of those old raid spaces throughout the story.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, yeah, it would just, I think every time we say, here's a big release of Destiny content, it should be packed full of surprises. And it's an opportunity for people to kind of get reacquainted with the player experience all over again. You know, Taken King is a good example of that because it's a reflection of everything that we've learned about this product over the course of year one. So, you know, we don't want to, you know, like I've said a few times, there's really no playbook that we can use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there isn't an ingredient, you know, like a recipe for this is what Destiny is. It's going to change.
Sure.
It's going to adapt to, you know, what the players say to us and how they spend their time in the game and what player data tells us. I've heard from a lot of players that say, you know, I never got to really feel like I was part of the Destiny endgame until House of Wolves came out, you know, and I got to matchmake into Prison of Elders, and I got to play with some of, you know, the people who were playing raids, and now they're playing Prison of Elders with me, or I go into Trials of Osiris. So, you know, we shake it up. We don't let people sit still. We're not being complacent. We don't want the community to be either.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed to me with House of Wolves and the Prison of Elders, one of the goals, and you even had released data, right, there were only a certain amount of people that got into the raid. Mm-hmm. And rightly so, right? Six mm-hmm. people, there's no matchmaking, yeah. you've got to have, you know, the Gjallarhorn because you're on LFG and all of the elitist stuff that happens there.
Sure.
But that was one of the goals, I assume, of Prison of Elders and House of Wolves. You know, one, maybe you can comment on that, but two, what is maybe the biggest thing right now that you are trying to improve with Destiny, period? Like, are you trying to just, you know, have the audience play more hours, or is it more about you have too many people that only play a little bit and they leave? You know what I mean? What's the biggest thing you're trying to solve yeah. with the design?
The hours thing is weird. I think we were shocked and taken aback by how much time people were putting into the game, and I don't think it's never been a goal of ours to you know, just get time, right? It doesn't really matter. Like, if somebody leaves and they're happy, great, right?
Yeah.
If you come in, and I think that would touch on the goals of the Taken King. Like, if you come in and you play the story and that's all you do, we want you to walk away and going, that was great, right?
Yeah.
I had a really great time. I can put that away or do whatever you want with it, right? Or if I just come in and play the story and then get some crucible time in or mm-hmm. check out the new strikes, oh, weren't those really fun, right? So we didn't expect people were going to play Battlestar, you know, 500 times.
Yeah.
And of course, it's going to be repetitive, right? And
yeah.
we could do some things now to try to make that a little more variable as you play through, you know, reacting to that. But and when we look at, like, hours, like mm-hmm. where what people are sort of investing their time in, the goal is also not to, like, hit 100% or some metric. Like, raids are a very specific activity for a very specific type of player, and we're not trying to throw players into a raid that don't want to have it, right? And so both of these speak to two pillars that we have, compatible with real life. When you be able to play it as a hobby, when you want to play it. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to play it, that's great. Like, you don't have to feel like you're being left behind. You can come back in a week later, a month later, whatever. Mm-hmm. And the other one is to have activities for every mood, and that's really about, like, you might be omnivorous and play everything. I might be a story guy.
Mm-hmm.
He might be a crucible guy. He's not. He's terrible, right?
Pretty bad.
But like, all three of those players should be able to enjoy something in Destiny. All three of those players should be able to interact and see each other in the world and check out their gear. When you walk through the tower, there's this really cool fantasy of, like, I see you, like, head to toe in your Trials of Osiris gear, and I'm, like, a PvE guy, and I'm like, holy shit, where'd he get that, right? And I can inspect you and go, like, oh.
Yeah. Hey, buy a guy a drink first. that makes a lot of sense. But, do you have a particular design goal right now with Taken King? I mean, I hear a lot about refining, making simpler, more obvious.
Yeah.
That must
more
come
rewarding,
from something.
You know, the time, over and over again, I think if you were to boil the feedback down to its basic element, people would say, I want you to respect the time I spend in this game. And so we want people to, when they come in and play in the Taken King, everything that you do now contributes to, you know, the leveling up process. You're obviously acquiring more powerful weapons and more powerful gear, you know, and that makes you more powerful as a character. But in terms of how do I reach the max level in this? How do I reach level 40? You know, the things that you do in the game, playing missions, killing enemies, you know, completing bounties, it all contributes to that. So mm-hmm. it's not a question mark anymore. You know, I like the fact that we're doing that. The designers, you know, certainly have their own goals, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, we feed off of that because we support the player. You know, in terms of being community managers, we have our own design goals. You know, we have an experience to support and sustain on Bungie.net, you know, and, you know, with additions to our team, sort of a renewed focus on working with the Bungie.net team, you know, I'd love for the recruitment forum to be more of an active, structured, focused place where we're leading by example, showing people how to form up into clans, shining a spotlight on different clans on Bungie.net, because anybody who wants that clan nameplate in the game, they need to maintain a group on Bungie.net.
Yeah.
You know, one of the largest of which is the IGN group.
That's right.
So
max capacity.
Exactly. You know, and you know, I've been a fan of and a member of clans for a long time, and I know that there's a stigma around it. People see them as elitist. People see them as exclusive instead of inclusive. There's an emotional barrier to entry there. But the more you get to know the people who are, you know, welcoming new recruits into their clans, and the more you see these people as helpful and friendly, you know, and we've got a welcome mat out in front of our private group, I'd love to sustain more of a conversation there, because I think that's the solution to a lot of the problems that the community would describe for themselves. You know, if I had sort of like a high council of overlords on Bungie.net who would go into the recruitment forum or tackle anybody on their forum who's like, I think we should have matchmaking for raids, you know, and it's like, I'm recruiting for my clan, we raid every Tuesday night, what's up?
Yeah.
that's one of the reasons we brought Cosmo on from you know, mm-hmm. the subreddit, so we can focus a lot more time and attention on our own house and Bungie.net and figuring out how we can manage that and put more resources there.
So since you brought it up, how do you reach level 40? There is still a lot of confusion. So what you've said so far is
shoot stuff.
That's right.
Hit stuff.
You can get 40, but the big people are wondering, do I get reset to level 20?
Nope.
I've got the message that, okay, you're deciding what level you get sort of set at depending on where you're at. But
if I had to say you got reset to level 20, I'd just like rip the headset off and
so
just like
run
out of
the building.
You can
confirm that won't happen.
Correct. So whatever. So right now there's this concept of level, and there's this concept of light level, right? And it's a little bit confusing, and there's this weird moment that happens in the game where you kind of transition, if you want to call it that. I think that's probably generous. You kind of like run face first into the brick wall, and you go, oh, light. Here's a piece of armor, right? And so the concept of light is not going away, but the level system is separated from it. And so when you're shooting things and getting experience, that's what's fueling your level, and that's the number that will show. And if you're a 32 or a 34, that's what's going to show when you start up the Taken King for the first time. The light system is something we're actually going to go really in depth on because we know it's an important topic, but it's nuanced, and there's a lot of detail there around it and the armor and the new armor slots. If you've seen like artifacts or ghost stuff, oh, there's numbers on the ghost. Like, we're going to go through all of that stuff on Twitch to make sure that we're having that conversation directly with our community, answering their questions, because they're going to have a ton of them.
Yeah.
And really showing, you know, really getting out there and having that conversation. It worked really well for us in terms of House of Wolves. It was really successful in terms of like being able to talk to them directly, right? I think we've got this really interesting thing that's happened in that. In the past, we always would have like these singular conversations, right? And just speak to everybody at once, Bungie.net, Twitter. And now we've got this really crazy engaged layer that's like permeated everything. Like when I sit and talk to you, you're not like, tell me about the campaign missions and the strikes and how many Crucible maps. You don't even ask that question, right? That's what you would have asked. But I mean, that's what you would have asked like straight away, like 2 years ago or 3 years ago or with most games. You want to know about light level, and you want to know about how you're
more granular now.
You're part of the engaged community, right? It's new for us, right?
Yeah. Okay. Speaking though of missions, will we get more hours perhaps out of the Taken King's missions? Like, I noticed with House of Wolves, there's a real step forward there.
Yeah.
I mean, can you at least say that we'll get more hours out of that,
or more
time?
Hours than what?
Then that perhaps the campaign.
The story should feel much more substantial. I think the story is going to feel a lot more novel. I think you're going to get a lot more cinematic moments, both in terms of the actual cinematics and the things that are happening in the mission. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a lot more characters speaking to you in the game and being realized. So, you know, if you ever wondered what happens in the Hall of Vanguards when you're away, we might be able to paint a scene in there to give you a little bit of insight into like Cade Six or like
drama,
you know,
at the Vanguard.
Drama at the Vanguard, absolutely. So those are things that we'll definitely bring into the campaign. And I know Luke Smith has talked about this a bunch, but you know, we have that campaign. We want people to play it and be really satisfied, but it's not the end all be all of our mission. So we're gonna have a wealth of quests in the aftermath, which sort of amount to what we're calling the Taken War. So you'll transition out of the story after confronting Oryx, and your quest log will just open up, and you'll have all these new avenues to go out in the world and have very much story-like missions that you can go and explore that all culminate and lead to the end game.
Okay, that's very interesting.
I think so.
Yes. Well, I don't know yet, so I guess I'll have to wait and see. Let's talk value for a moment, because that was a very big topic when you guys announced the price of the Taken King. Mm-hmm. We're getting a lot closer, right? Before it was like, well, look, we have more to announce. Mm-hmm. I feel like you guys have announced a lot, so... Mm-hmm. You know, what makes the Taken King worth twice as much as Dark Below, if I had to put it in those terms? Because Dark Below has a raid, this has a raid. Can you speak more to what makes, you know, that valuable?
Sure, like, I can maybe let Deej talk a little bit too, but no, you've got this. I'm not going to. A full campaign. I think people are going to enjoy the cinematics, the characters, the missions. We're taking you to, you know, the Dreadnought, to Phobos, up into colony ships. Nathan Fillion's talking to you. Lance Reddick's talking to you. It's good stuff.
But how do you describe that there's more? Because that's what, because
this is seven
the eternal challenge.
So you want the numbers, like the box, like the back of the box stuff? So, that's fine.
No, I just mean, like, how do you Because, right, like, it's hard to put a price on anything, really, right? You got, 500 people making a game, and you put all this time in it, and it's, you know, that's how you would maybe break down value, right, is, like, going into how much you spent on it, and then...
Oh, you mean,
but
like,
the point
per
is,
individual, how do you get to their value equation, their
No,
bar?
But I just mean, like, the point is, Dark Below, you guys decided it was $20. Mm-hmm. Now you've got something that you guys
decided. I was advocating a much cheaper
price. I make all the decisions.
That's twice as much. So the reaction is, oh, it's twice as much. So
I don't think.
How do you describe that?
I don't have any trouble saying that The Taken King is well more than twice as much content as The Dark Below. I think people are going to be pretty. I don't want to oversell it, right? I want to set expectations properly. But for me playing it, it's a really great experience. The story's great. There's 7 Crucible multiplayer maps. There's 3 brand new strikes, and they're the best strikes we've delivered to date. There's a lot of variety in them. They're really fun. We've got the Dreadnought, which is not just a big new destination to explore. It's really deep and layered. There's tons of like little hidden secrets and things you can collect that might take the community half as long as we probably perceive they will to figure out, but riddles and clues and stories and quests and quest logs and more guns and more gear than we delivered and exotics and like... we've got 3 revised strikes that are existing D1 strikes, but with the Taken infused in them to change them up for the first time. Nice. We've got the raid. We've got a bunch of stuff we aren't talking about, but will about our end game content. But
so I mean, still more
every player has to make their own value equation. I hate coming out and feeling like I'm doing the sales pitch, like a ShamWow kind of thing. But
no,
like,
I mean,
like I think in terms of like if you put like and it's also like I don't want to belittle the work of the guys who worked on The Dark Below, right? It was a different time and a different world in that product. They're proud of it, and I want to make sure that we're not saying like, oh, that was just like this little piece of content. I think there was some substantive fun stuff in there, and it's led us down a really great path too. Like the Aeris quest lines have birthed what you saw in House of Wolves, and will birth the next sort of iteration on that content for The Taken King. So, I mean, one of the pieces of feedback we got in our recent studio playtest was that so many new quests appeared in your log after that you completed the story that people were overwhelmed, and I think that's. Something will solve the way it's conveyed to you, but there's a lot of stuff to do.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, again, the community.
It's an awesome value.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to put a number on it, and like for some people, it's going to feel like a $60 game. You know, they've never played it. Well, it will be for some people, but
yeah.
It is it's a second year release, and just because it's on a persistent world, there's this feeling that there's a lot of old stuff in it, but. It sounds
it's like everything. It's like it's new, right? So like describing it to somebody, a lot of times it's like I can't remember who I was talking to, but it's like, hey, I'm not gonna pay and play until I hear from a friend. It's like great, like go out there and get information and get knowledge, and like we'll tell you what's in it. We'll give you trailers. We'll do Twitch stuff, and if that doesn't convince you, ask a friend. Ask you guys.
Right.
You guys, you guys gonna chat about it and talk about it. Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, that's fair. That's great. So maybe just. Take a step back again to reflecting on it. It's almost been a year. Like, what makes it special? What have you seen that makes it special? But to you guys, like to have an example, like definitely the community side. I find myself like it's just I'm hopping into a strike so I can just talk to my friends. But it's got that core experience that's just so solid that it turns into this community aspect of just hanging out. And then also for me it's just so polished, games like this normally don't come so polished, and the gunplay, just the little animations, the graphical touches, for me, that's what makes it special to me, in the gunplay, but I'm curious for you guys, what stands out to you?
We're always talking about, community stories. We said so many times before the game launched that your own personal story is going to be the most meaningful part of this game. We were at Gamescom last year, and we were trying to explain to people what Destiny was. Some of them knew because they took a few first steps in the beta. But over the course of the past 10, 11 months, we've seen the emergence of this new community. People who are, old veterans on Bungie.net are sort of, shocked even, They were like, there's been a gold rush under this forum and like nobody knows who we are, It's like,
Back in Murray, dude.
Yeah, exactly. We really have seen sort of new blood infuse our community. They've come from so many different types of games. Destiny means different things to them for so many different reasons. And You know, whereas last year people would come up and say, you know, what is a public event going to feel like? How's that going to work? Are you going to interrupt my mission and you're going to make me have like a multiplayer match? Like, what are you doing? You know, it was it was no proof of concept for this. And we keep doing that to ourselves to an extent. You know, it's like, so what are you doing now? And what's the value? And why should I be excited about this? It's like, yeah, we're doing something totally different now. So let's go back to the drawing board and talk to you about what Destiny is now. Yeah. But that's also great. It was like I was saying before, you know, we don't want to rest on our laurels and just keep spitting out the same thing. Mm-hmm. We want to say, here's our next idea for what this should be. But the community knows what the game is now. Mm-hmm. Last year, we were talking to basically a Bungie fan club that was looking forward to buying something.
Yeah.
You know, it was a very salesy type relationship. Now it's, you know, they're very engaged, they're deeply invested, you know, and it's like, we understand that you have vast holdings in a vault and we would like to talk to you, but you know, it's almost like, you know, like our first Twitch stream is gonna feel almost like an investor relations call, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, gather around, Guardians, we're going to talk about what we have planned for the next quarter.
It's true,
and, you know, but that's an interesting dichotomy because these people are so deeply engaged. They have such a sense of ownership in this game. You know, they are citizens of that city. And, you know, that's why, when we talk to them, you know, we do like to sort of sustain that theater, you know, to call them Guardians, you know, and to make them feel as if, you know, this is not just a community, it's sort of like a shared civilization in their imaginations. And to have them tell us their stories this time at Gamescom is awesome. You know, people run up to me and like talk to me about, I play this game with my wife and it's brought us closer together.
Yeah,
you know, I joined a clan. I've never been in a clan before. I thought they were dumb, but now these people are my best friends. You know, those sorts of things are what I think.
We had an elderly couple come in and do an interview.
Dude, yeah, this guy.
It's like, really?
Yeah, this guy was like older than my parents and he came in, you know, and you know, was like, you know, he's dialed into the community. He's reading our forum. You know, he understands like the social meta among the people that play the game.
His wife was just sitting there beaming.
Yeah, looking adoringly at him. You know, I mean, it was just like you never know who you're going to meet through Destiny.
I think unexpected is a great word. Somebody asked me earlier today to describe Destiny in one word, and I was, you know, tired and sick. And but I think unexpected is like a great word, right? Like all around for and it's unexpected to sit here and have someone ask me like, What do you think of when you reflect on year one? Like that's pretty cool, right? And I have people go like, you know, let's talk about the iconic weapons in the game after like less than a year. Like that's pretty cool. Like, and that was a big goal for us, is that like, let's build a world players wanted to be in and could value and treat as a hobby and share with other people. And I think everything that can be said about criticism, and it's all fair and it's all stuff that we listen to, like, I feel like we've had a pretty good first year. I feel like I definitely am not responsible for most of the stuff, but I'm pretty proud of the team and the stuff that we've done and how we get out there and just deliver, you know, not just what we want, but listening to the community, because they now have heritage. They own a piece of this. Like that's what a community is. It's not an audience. Mm-hmm. They own it, right?
Yeah, they've, like Deidre said, they are so invested now. They have thousands of hours in some cases, and that's why it means so much to them and why they're so vocal with all of their feedback.
Absolutely.
It's a nice problem to have.
Well, and people are in our studio, too. You know, some people will talk to me and they'll say, you know, I'm glad that you come to the forum, or I'm glad you come to, you know, this website, you know. Thank you so much for reading all this feedback. I know it must be really hard to read the feedback sometimes. It's like, this isn't anywhere near as brutal as some of the internal email strings that you'll see at Bungie. You know, I mean, we have people who are just as invested. They go home every night after looking at this game, after, you know, creating this game, and they go home at night and they fire up their, you know, own personal console and they play it. And they come in the next day and they jump into those email strings, you know, and they debate the experience with each other.
Cool off from a hard day at work, working on Destiny, by going home and playing Destiny.
Playing some Destiny.
Yeah, right?
Come back in the next morning and rage about Destiny.
Do.
Get back to working on Destiny. It's just,
I know.
I haven't played another game. It's very sad.
Yeah, it's amazing. Time. I've not played a game this much in as long as I can remember. You know, and I tell people that all the time. I'm like, it was unexpected. Yeah, like I thought. I was just like a Bungie fan, and I thought, I can't wait to see this world that they've been talking about. And then next thing I know, like, people were like, why aren't you coming out this weekend? Like, I'm like a single bachelor in San Francisco, and I'm like, I'm just going to stay in, a little tired. And I'm up till 4 a.m. playing, you know, trying to get
relaxing.
Yeah.
Winding
and
down.
I was relaxing. So we are going to wrap things up very shortly here. I have
awesome.
one quick tough question, and then we're going to end
quick,
on a high
one.
Note.
Oh, so we got to go, right?
Yeah, right.
Look at the time.
Yeah, all back to getting the
signal
okay,
over
that's
here.
It. Let's go. No, it's not too bad. This is a very common topic that's come up.
You can ask whatever.
Dedicated servers. You know, Halo 5, Call of Duty, you know, this is so important to the fans out there. Will we get dedicated servers with Destiny, with Taken King?
I mean, if, not with the Taken not King, Taken but King. If you're specifically talking about, like Iron, like the actual server equipment, we have millions of dollars of dedicated servers running the everything from your Guardian.
Right, sure.
Like when you snap open your window and like everything pops up, that's like it's all running off our servers. We have a military grade secret location database that has insane amount of hardware. Yeah. So
maybe it's
that said, like we definitely hear, and I think the question is much more about investing specifically in Crucible, right?
Yes.
And there's some work we can do there, and we are absolutely rolling out some new networking features under the hood for the Taken King to help with a lot of that. You know, our matchmaking team is constantly making improvements, and maybe that's a matter of us talking about that a little bit more. But I think at the end of the day, though, it's really like, am I getting lag in the Crucible or not, right?
It is, yeah, exactly. It's really
like
trials
say,
at this point.
Say all you want.
You know,
yeah,
you're on your eighth win, and all of a sudden some guy's dragging you down, and then it's like that's where suddenly the community's like, why aren't they fixing this?
There are definitely things we can do with hardware. There are definitely things we can do with our own matchmaking technology and what we do there. One thing we'll never be able to solve is like what happens between your house and your ISP or that ISP. Like we were at Gamescom yesterday and we had an hour of outage, and our guys are amazing. They like got in touch with the ISP, found out what was going on, routed around a backbone, then got another like hit back at our US server. So then they went around that and like filtered IPs. So like we can see this stuff
matrix
going
stuff.
On. It's matrix. I don't even know what's going on. It's matrix type stuff. And we make a lot of those refinements under the hood. Like we've reached out to college campuses and helped them upgrade their configurations on their routers. Like we've talked to ISPs and said, hey, you're filtering this traffic in a certain way and it's causing some problems. Can we get a little love over here? So we even go to that length, but
I mean, I think the point is, like, you guys obviously have a big infrastructure there. You have a big team.
Yep.
I would say it. Maybe it is just talking about it more. You guys are actually very good with that. Like, you're never one to back down from, hey, I agree with you. We need more vault space.
Yeah.
We're not talking about it yet, per our last interview.
That sounds like a big promise to make, Deej.
But you guys you tend to be more open about stuff. And I would say on the dedicated server side, it's like you basically are agreeing, right? Like, we can make those improvements, right?
We're constantly looking to improve that experience and monitoring it. So, like, the data we get on that stuff is you know, huge. Like, we're getting reams of data on these types of errors and these types of errors. And that's why those errors are segmented. So, with, you know, so much explicit, like, you know, fruit names and animal names, the zoological stuff.
Right.
That's so we can pinpoint exactly what's happening and go after it, right? So we do updates in our, you know, what's up doc stuff in the BWU about those specific things, but maybe we can be a little louder. Maybe we'll roll Luis out.
Yeah. It sounds like, there's some networking improvements that are coming with Taken King. So
every day, I mean, every time we take Destiny offline for maintenance, you know, a lot of people, but I want to play. It's like, yes, but you're also talking to us about how you want it to be more stable and how you want it to work better. You know, it's like we're thrilled you want to play, which is why we're taking it offline.
Yeah.
Maintenance is good. You know,
we have to take it.
I think you hit the nail on the head, though. It's like it's right now Trials and Iron Banner because they've become so popular and they've become so populated that you're seeing more of it, right? And it's become more important.
The stakes are
high. The stakes are a lot higher, right? So, like, across the board, you know, we have our outages and we have our downtime. It's another thing I'm pretty proud of for the team, but a lot of other experiences don't stand up at launch, and we had a lot of people come in and you know, for the most part, we've been pretty good.
Yeah, it's been great. Okay, so I just want to end on what has been your biggest moment in playing the game, and I'll give you mine. It must have been around like Christmas of last year, you know. I was in Vault of Glass Hard, and it just was like my first or second time in there, actually, but I got with a crew who had been through it a lot, and an incredible drop, and it was like that time in the game where I like almost jumped up out of my seat on the couch, you know, and screamed like, I got like Vex, I got Atheon's Epilogue, I got the helmet, I got it all at once. But I remember that moment, and that to me is something that makes Destiny special, and it's actually chasing the gear, which is why, you know, I'm looking forward to Taken King. I want that feeling again of chasing this amazing stuff where I feel like it's diminished a little bit. There's so many weapons, you reroll all this stuff. But less about that topic and more. Do you have a moment like that you could share? yourselves?
Yeah, I've talked about this before, but the moment for me was actually during development. So I came into the Halo experience as a huge fan, but I came in late and I wasn't there at the foundation of it. So for me, it was like sitting for the first time and seeing Jason talk about what we were going to do for the next whatever, right? And just hearing how he talked about it and just knowing, like, I want to do that, right? And then in terms of gameplay, it was the first time I was just tooling around in a dev build and heard machine gun fire and turned, and there's Andreas Jenkins, the guy I work with, running by, and we just kind of went and just went and had a little adventure together, and I was like, I saw that written down on paper, but that was pretty fucking awesome, right?
Yeah, that's cool.
And those are the moments that continue to be what makes, you know, that's the catalyst for my play, and I was like, who's online? What are they doing? Let's play some games together, right?
Cool. Do you have a moment like that?
Absolutely. I mean, I've it's hard to narrow it down to just one. You know,
was it the Prison of Elders reveal?
The Prison of Elders reveal where I showed. Yeah, no. There
go. Yeah.
I was
live production, right?
I was in the tower one time and I left my controller idle, and I came out of the game room, you know, like cracking open a fresh beer, you know, and I'm talking to my wife, and she follows me back into the game room and she sees my character standing there in the tower, and there are five people seated on the lawn around my character, and she goes, oh my God, what are they doing? You know, and bless her heart, I mean, God love her, she puts up with me because she doesn't play games at all, you know, she watches classic films, and I go, I don't know, I don't even know if they're still there at their controller, and so I put my character into a dance, and then they all pop up and they start dancing, and she's like, wow, look at that, you know, and then I accept a party invite and they say, do you want to come on a raid? You know, and it's like, you know, let's go. And we go into the Vault of Glass. I mean, that was like almost 6 months to 9 months ago. And but like just a couple of weeks ago, we actually, you know, we got a call from Lance Reddick, who voices Commander Zavala.
Yeah.
And he plays the game. He's pretty
really?
Good at the game.
Wow, that's awesome.
But he had never been into the Vault of Glass. So we're like, we'll take Lance Reddick on his first raid. And I was like, hey, can I call you Zavala? He's like, yeah, sure, yeah. You know,
and
and so, you know, and you're playing with a Titan who's voiced by Commander Zavala, you know, and
that's
I'm like, copy that, Commander. Zavala, over here, stay close to me, you know, and then, you know, like he swoops in, you get a Fist of Havoc, goes, I got these guys, boom, you know, and orbs fly in the air, and I'm like, this is the best NPC I've ever played with, this is amazing, you know, like, the AI here is so interactive, you
that's
know?
Funny.
So, yeah, taking Zavala on a raid was pretty trippy, pretty surreal.
That's pretty cool. I actually know Morla Eris.
Yeah. So oh, yeah.
I should see if she'll raid with me. I never thought about that, but that would be a lot of fun to play with the voice.
In this chamber,
well.
We will find Crota.
Exactly.
Take Eris on a raid.
Your Redick's way better than your Morla.
Yeah. Steps into a wool with the Cabal.
Nice. Exactly. Yeah, nice.
Now do it like you have a head cold.
Yeah, exactly. You need to be more up there. His voice is so awesome. Yeah, you guys have chosen some really great voices. Yeah, can't wait to see how Nolan works out. Yeah. I'm looking forward to
hearing. I think he's going
to
be great. We're pretty excited.
He's always great.
Yep.
Like that's the thing with Nolan. He's in so many games, and you're like, isn't he just going to be Drake again? And it's like, no. Like, he's just got such a great voice. You want to listen to more of him. So
yeah, every time you ever see that thread pop up, like, oh, he just does Drake, then you get the reel that pops up, and people are like, holy shit, this is amazing. Yeah.
So I can't wait. All right, well, thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks for having
us. Very special episode of Fireteam Chat. We're going to talk more about everything you guys announced this week, so everybody else, be sure to catch the second part of Fireteam Chat. And do you want to actually let everybody know where to find you on Twitter or otherwise before we go?
At Bungie.
And you?
At Bungie's the way to go.
Okay.
I'm at
you don't
Erk
do
McGurk.
Personal.
He's at
We're used to doing that. Yeah. You can find me at Fran Mirabella. And we'll be continuing the show, so stay tuned, everyone. Thanks.
Well, you guys wanted it. You're getting it today. We have a one-hour special Gamescom episode for you. We're continuing the episode now with Fran Mirabella. Hi,
hey,
Fran.
What's up?
Sean Finnegan.
Hello.
You guys are back.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be talking about the legendary weapons that are going to be left behind. We're going to talk about the new light system a little bit and how we maybe think it might work or we want it to work.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to hit on Dinklebot and how we feel about him.
All right.
Yeah. And possibly some Vault Space stuff.
Yeah. Let's see where we go. There was a lot of announcements this week.
Yeah, there's a lot to go through. Let's start with legendary weapons. So all the year one legendaries are going to be pretty much obsolete when the Taken King, not obsolete, but
that's what we're here to talk about.
No longer as powerful.
Will they? Will they or won't they?
Well, what do you guys think?
And they've said, well, for clarity, they've said that you will not be able to upgrade, you know, or however it will work, bring those into the year two strength and power. And so there's going to be a whole new set of weapons.
Yep.
And they've just kind of said, well, there's going to be a ton of new weapons and we want you to use them, but you'll still have opportunities to use your legendaries.
Yeah, from the get-go, they've said that this Taken King expansion is going to be the largest induction of weapons since Vanilla Destiny. So we have to imagine that there's a slew of new things out there to explore and things that are going to be very different and powerful and awesome ways, and I think part of the design there was kind of letting go of those weapons that you had come to become had come to use all the time.
They don't want you relying on like one thing. They want you to try out the new stuff.
Sure.
I think
it's as simple, like, look, this is until we use them, we're not going to know. And the way I had put it is that House of Wolves has kind of lured us into this feeling of like, oh, there's all these new weapons that I don't care about. Like, there's a few in there, right?
Yeah.
But you have this feeling of like, oh, there's more, but all you're doing is using your Gjallarhorn and your Icebreaker and your Fatebringer and your Hawkmoon, and all of that was there on day one. So now 365
unless
days later,
you're on
roughly.
Xbox.
Yeah.
That's right, unless you're on Xbox. Then you're just getting, you'll get your Hawkmoon soon.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get the point, right? That all the special weapons are from super long ago.
So let's talk about the Hawkmoon thing for a second. They're going to get Hawkmoon. I guess that's an exotic. So that can be upgraded.
So, exotics don't really factor into this. In fact, most of the focus now for people is on, instead of chasing that last-minute Fatebringer or Black Hammer, which we know now that... you're not really going to be able to bring them with you in terms of upgrading their power. And we've got a confirmation from Deej on this very stage a couple hours ago, or maybe yesterday. Yeah. I don't remember when that was.
Doesn't matter when it was.
Etheric Light is going away.
Yep.
It is not it's not a thing anymore.
That's the second time they've abandoned an upgrade path. They did with the Dark Below, and then they're
I think they're learning a lot about it's too freaking complex. You know, you got all this different stuff. They've definitely, for Taken King, that is the message. He's getting narrower in the complexity to just do stuff. Like,
but those exotics, you know, those are going to be unaffected. They want exotics. Part of the design philosophy of exotics was that they should feel special and powerful, and that's not changing. And so that's the priority now, is I'm leveling up my Hard Light to finish that out. Right after that, it's Vex Mythic class, which I got only a month ago.
That's a good one.
But yeah,
so
I mean,
which legendaries are you going to miss the most if you had to pick three?
Obviously, Fatebringer, right?
Yeah.
Fatebringer, I had this discussion many times with Fran. I think Fatebringer is not just the best... not just the best PvE hand cannon out there, but maybe the best PvE primary in general.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's that good.
Fran, you were starting to say something.
Well, no, I'll come back to that.
Okay.
It's sort of the reasoning behind this is still, to be discussed. But
what
am I going to miss? I don't know that I will yet. And that was what I was getting at, was like, they need to introduce all these new special weapons, but you have to chase them. And so as I was just talking to them, if you listen to part one, it was about, for me, what makes Destiny really so much fun and why I've actually trailed off in playing it, I like to chase this gear, to finally get it, to finally upgrade it and feel that new power.
Oh yeah.
And now that I've had a lot of that, like, sure, I like playing Prisoner, but it feels like I'm not chasing that at the end of the rainbow that there's something.
You kind of plateau.
Right.
Yeah,
and so maybe going back to my point I was making is they need to recreate that, because they've really exhausted with so many weapons. And as much as you love your Fatebringer, think about a 10-year experience here that they're building. You know, you can't have 100 awesome Fatebringer-esque type weapons, right? Or nothing special at all.
Yeah.
And so I think what we're going to see is, yes, they're like, it's tough love. You're going to have to abandon some of these legendaries. The exotics are still going to be special.
Yeah.
But even on that, think of down the road having all those exotics. And it's like, oh, maybe I'll use my Plan C or this special fusion, or who knows how they'll balance that stuff. But I think that's important to remember here, is that you feel like something's being taken away from you.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I really hope, and that's why I brought up House of Wolves, there's a bunch of stuff that I just didn't care about. But I hope in this you're like, holy crap, from King's Fall, that new weapon, oh my God, you have to get it. To get that back.
That'd be great.
And that is actually a good point. Like, players in some capacity feel like things are being taken away from them, but they're not. Like, you can still use the weapon.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of things you can do in the game, especially now that Taken King's coming out and introducing a lot of new activities, where you can go back and not necessarily have to use your A-plus elite set of gear and weapons. Like, if you want to go back and feel a little nostalgic and jump into Vaults of Glass and bring out the old Fatebringer, like, they brought that up on the stream, like, that's something you can do, and it's an option for you.
Yeah.
It's not it's being dismantled for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Crucible, you're still pretty set, obviously, with Iron Banner and Trials.
Yeah.
You know, maybe
Crucible, you can still use these weapons, and players that are going to experience year two, they said, like, they might be wondering where you got your Fatebringer and why you're using it in Crucible, because it'll be an equal damage rating with the new
and
stuff.
And I mean, honestly, that's just the nature, like, that's the nature of an MMO game, and not that, like, they've been careful to say that Destiny is not an MMO, but it has MMO-like features, and we kind of come to understand it in that framework. But, like, in World of Warcraft, like, the gun, or the weapons and the armor that was prominent and undisputedly the best in Vanilla WoW changed to Burning Crusade and then was again outdated with Wrath of the Lich King and there after every iteration. And that's just the nature of it, you know? Like, you kind of got to get used to the idea that the same weapons aren't going to be as powerful in the long run. Because what kind of game is that, right? Like, what if you were in, like you pointed out earlier, like, what if you were in year five and you're still using that Fatebringer because it's still the best? Like, that wouldn't be very fun, would it?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and it's arguable for House of Wolves, right? Like, the thing that I chased was Etheric Light, so I could take this old weapon and just use it in the game. And so I think, you know, it is as simple as with Taken King, they're going, they're knocking you down a step by forcing you to say, nope, you got to get new gear. The chase is on again. So I do like that, but the feeling they've created again, though, is like, you have all these powerful weapons, and so it's going to be a little confusing at first to be like, wait, I can't, you know, bring that forward. But that'll only be temporary. So it really depends on the weapons they have, right? Honestly, that's everything. Like, you're not going to care about Fatebringer if there's a better hand cannon.
And honestly,
you won't.
I'm really, I'm looking forward to this, like, you know, 2 week to month long period of just like, everything is,
that's what
everyone,
I'm saying.
Everyone is figuring out. Like, no one knows what is the best way to play now. I mean, everyone, at this point in the game, everyone knows, like, if you want a PvP, you need a Thorn, you need a Last Word. That's basically what it is. In PvE, you need, like, you know, a Fang of Erute, or you need, like, a Fatebringer, or you're not really doing it right. With Taken King, like, all of that's going out the window, there's going to be all new weapons, and we're all going to kind of be in this mad scramble to kind of figure it out. And that's going to be fun. That's interesting.
With new weapons, we're also going to be working towards new gear, and the light level's going away. So,
well, no, it's not going away. The light leveling system is going away, but light will still be there.
As level affects your, sorry, as light affects your level cap, they're separated now.
Yeah, and that's something that they confirmed on the stream, but have been a little cagey about the details of what light will specifically do. But we know it does something. I guess the question here is, like, what do we think it's going to do?
But first, let's just clarify, right, that the level cap is 40. They've confirmed. And now, through just some missions and achievements, et cetera, you will get to level 40.
Through a normal progression.
Wearing light.
It's like killing stuff.
That's right. Wearing light does not matter. What they haven't quite confirmed how it works is, as you step into Taken King, if you've already been playing, you will be set at the max level that you're at. However it figures out, you know, what gear you have that makes you who you are, because sometimes I go to the tower and I'm wearing my, like, level 20 gear just for fun.
Really?
I don't, of course, I call it my casual tower
gear. Had that discussion.
My robes. But, you know, the point is...
Casual gear.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think you have to worry about, oh no, I was wearing this gear and it set me at 20. And they've confirmed you will not get reset to 20 if you've, you know, you're well past that. So I think all it's going to do is figure out you have enough gear to be 34, you've made it, you're 34. And
I honestly think that it's just that. they'll set your character at whatever the max level you've achieved was on any of your characters.
I like that
It's that simple, right?
I really like that they're getting rid of the light leveling system because it's going to increase diversity in the tower, you know, like no one's going to look the same. Everyone's going to look totally different. They're going to be able to wear their loungewear as their main gear.
The announcement kind of, I'm still of two minds on it because I understand why having the light leveling system pigeonhole people into particular gear pieces, and I don't think that that's the way it should be. You should be able to kind of mix and match towards your style or towards different armor stats. I like that. At the same time, I kind of lament the fact that they've now separated the light from the leveling system, and now we're back to a very traditional experience-based system when light presented you with the opportunity to do something unique and interesting, right? I brought up the idea of Diablo 3 has this thing where when you get to the max level, you can continue farming and doing things that give you Paragon points, right? And then you can allocate Paragon points to different statistics that made you even more customizable, right? So, like, perhaps you allocate Paragon points towards, like, increased attack speed or increased health regeneration or increased armor for damage reduction. And it's like, if light worked that way, that would be awesome, right? Because it's still a useful stat that you want to farm, and it rewards players for and incentivizes them to play more, and it still makes it valuable, right? Now it just seems like there's no everyone's at the max level anyway. We don't really need light.
Well, but that's what this now question is, right?
Yeah.
So to go back to that, what do we think light will influence? They did basically allude to and say light will dictate you gaining entry to certain things.
Hmm.
They didn't quite put it that way, but it was like, you know, depending on your light level, you'll get access to certain things. But I took that as maybe to get into the raids, like you
the
have
raids
to have
or maybe the strikes,
a certain light level
or parts of the raids. You need a higher
see,
light.
Well,
rate.
Maybe there's
wouldn't that be worse though? Because now, like, I'm the max level. I have great gear, but now I need to farm this arbitrary statistic just for entry. That
well,
would
but
be
wait,
even worse.
Your
right?
your gear still has light, and light still affects the gear. It doesn't affect your level cap, and that's what this is all about.
Sure, but doesn't that still pigeonhole you in some way to getting that gear, that particular
that
gear
that,
to be able
yeah.
to get in the raid?
Yeah, but
like, that doesn't really solve the
well,
problem.
Well, if maybe if it's a raid, but I guess the point is there might be, let's say it's special missions, right? But mm-hmm. I could imagine a world where it's like, okay, now I have to use my gear from King's Fall, which has this light level, just to do this mission. You know, maybe it's something like that. Again, you have to equip this light, whatever light's going to do. I think that makes a lot of sense, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like the whole game, you now can't do stuff. That's what they've solved with the level cap, right? Is that you can go and you can play all this stuff without too much issues. But anyway, that's my idea. I feel like it would make sense for that. Do you guys think, what else could it be
actually,
for?
Actually, no, you bringing that up actually made me think of a lot of different ways that light like could be used as a statistic within particular events. Like maybe it does things like, the more light you have, the faster your super recharges in during this one thing or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Or like the more light you have, the more damage resistant you are to a particular type of damage in this raid. Like something like that. That could be really interesting. Mm-hmm. And that could be new mechanics that we haven't seen in raids or strikes before, which could be interesting to deal with.
Yeah, I don't know if like the light level should make you stronger. I don't know if that would really work. I think, feel like it might unbalance the game. But it might like work with the weapons that you have to make them act differently.
Sure.
I'm not really sure what they're going to do.
Stronger, I guess, is not the right terminology, mm-hmm. if that's what you inferred from what I was saying. But, like, again, going back to World of Warcraft, there were encounters with, like, frost worms where they did a lot of frost damage. And in order to survive this massive amount of frost damage, you needed to have a special type of gear that gave you frost resistance. What if light was that statistic, right?
That,
like, in different raids, it provided you special allocations to deal with damage or do bonus damage or increase healing over time or just any number of statistics that could change the way players are interacting with strikes and stuff. Because right now it's kind of just like,
go to the strike, kill the thing,
kill everything and get out and take as least amount of damage that you can, but not really because they weren't that hard anyway.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how they balance it because like, I don't know, like meaning now you think about it like, okay, I don't have to worry about switching my gear around and my level dropping. At the same time, I do think there's a special feeling of wearing the right gear for the right stuff, you know? And so I think they still want to retain that, and I think light has something to do with that.
It goes back to something that we, you know, we actually asked Eric in our interview that he wasn't able to specifically answer, but, like, you know, maybe this lays the foundation for set bonuses in the future, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're wearing 2 out of 3 of the Kell Hunter's set path, you get 10 seconds off your golden gun or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Class-specific set bonuses that incentivize players to wear X number of pieces of gear from a set.
The other major topic we need to talk about is the new vault system. They've kind of hinted that they're going to change it in some way to make it work.
They confirmed.
Yes, they are.
They confirmed that they are addressing
it,
vault space.
Addressing it. Yeah.
They already addressed it once. So that is the...
Yeah.
They have not said it is 100% solved, because what does that even mean?
Your inkling
is that it is.
They are strutting around right now that I'm just gonna say they're like, come watch, you know, we're gonna do a big reveal later.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the vault then. It's obviously one of the most wanted things right now. So I do feel confident in Destin. You brought up a good example with shaders of how they solve
so
that.
Like,
so maybe
they're like, if you've unlocked a shader, you're just gonna have access to it. Maybe it's kind of like that with guns. If you unlock a gun, like you unlock Fatebringer, you will have access to that in some way. Now, we talked yesterday, and I brought up the gunsmith. They said they're reworking the gunsmith.
Yeah, I was gonna say you had a unique theory of how this might integrate with the gunsmith.
Yeah, they're gonna
To elaborate?
Yeah, they're gonna make him like useful, right? They said that. So like, what if you were able to just buy any of the guns that you have unlocked at any time if you need them. So you just like go to the gunsmith, suit up with your weapons you want.
I actually like that. Like more, he's like your arsenal keeper or a quartermaster.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea of having to buy them again, because if like I got the drop and it's mine, can't you just hold it for me?
Yeah.
Like, just hold it for me.
Maybe
and
pay
let me
rent.
Grab it.
Pay
if
a glimmer.
I want it. Yeah.
But you bring up a very interesting point, and that's kind of I was maybe being too optimistic in thinking that it might be that way for the vault. But like, imagine there is no vault.
Yeah. Right? What if they just got rid of it?
Like, that's kind of like the shader thing. They're almost saying like, you just, well, they didn't quite confirm it, but it was almost like you just have access to it. The point is, everything now is trapped in, okay, these six things or nine things on the left of what you have equipped. Well, why does it have to be that? Like, what if you select your primary, you know, and then you select what you want? I mean, that would be the easiest thing to do. Like, you select gear, right? You just select it. There is no vault. That would be awesome.
From just like
a drop down or something.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah.
But that's where, okay, right, that the game like this, I think the reasoning behind vault was like, right, organization and all that. But, you know, maybe they've got a way of addressing that. You know, maybe there is no vault. That would sort of break the design of the game, though. Like, what would then, now that the tower that has a vault? And
yeah.
So, you know, that's my dream, is that it's all just there, because I really don't like wasting time.
Yeah.
But maybe they've come close to that.
But
otherwise, maybe they gave us, right, the shelves, the way to organize, and a ton of limitless space, actually, to just store stuff.
Yeah, because you can buy stuff at the gunsmith right now at any given time. How hard would it be to just let him have a bigger inventory?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I do think in Taken King that they've solved a lot of those. Like we've always talked about on this show, is like that fundamentally is something really easy to solve, right? There's a bunch of ways to make me not waste all this time in, okay, I got to go back to the tower. Yeah. I got to do this. Or wait, I'm on my phone putting this thing away. Oh, wait, it's on my other character. Let me, you know, like that's kind of a ridiculous thing to have in a game that actually is this polished.
Yeah.
And I do think that they've heard it loud and clear. They've experienced it themselves. So again, I'm being optimistic, but I feel like Taken King, you know, which they've said is, you know, we got them to talk about it right in the first part. They've said definitely, you know, it's over twice as much, you know, stuff and content, you know, that you're going to get out of it. So I feel like they've made some really important fixes like this.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely. The last thing we were going to talk about is Dinklebot is getting replaced by Nolan North. They're taking out all of Peter Dinklage's lines and replacing it. How do you feel about that?
Why is this such a big topic?
Yeah,
we
it's
all
actually
said
not.
Immediately.
It's interesting because they're literally removing an actor from their product.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's surprising that they would do that.
But we all wanted that, right? Mm-hmm.
Well,
no, I mean,
I don't know. I mean, did you guys want it? I know some people wanted it. You interviewed Eric the other day, and you bluntly put it, you're doing this because people had a negative reaction to it, which I thought was presumptuous because, maybe his performance as the Dinklebot.
They have a ton of money. They could have just hired Peter Dinklage again.
No, but here's the thing is like, Peter Dinklage is, it's not just money. That dude is so busy nowadays.
Yeah.
Like he's one of
he was
Hollywood's
busy when,
top
properties. Well, maybe not when they recorded it because Game of Thrones hadn't really hit yet. Had it? When they recorded his dialogue, like
know.
That could have been.
But even so, right? Like,
long before
still,
Game
yeah,
of Thrones,
veteran actor, top quality guy. Mm-hmm. Not really a video game person, and I'm sure, like, and I've worked with and talked with actors who've done both, and it's a very different way of recording. He may just not have felt it really well, and I think that comes across more than just, like, he didn't really work out for him. Like, I don't think people were very apprehensive about his performance. Do you? Like, were people out there like, this
yes.
is really bad?
Yeah.
I thought it was like, I love Peter Dinklage on Game of Thrones, and he's a great actor. So one of two
sounds
things
like
happened,
called
I
up,
think. Yeah.
Like, what's it the line?
Did
oh,
sound
came
like
from the moon.
One of two things happened. Yeah. He called it in. He really didn't care.
Phoned
he got paid
in.
A ton of money. Not literally called in, although they do that with VO all the time. Or on the other side, like, yeah, it was like rushed and misdirected. Mm-hmm. And maybe even from the top, right, they said no, right, in the same way that Paul McCartney plays that really weird song in the credits.
Yeah.
And, like, he basically has said, yeah, you know, I did it for the money. Like, you know, maybe that's what happened. But either way, like, when I heard it, I was like, and I love, you know, VO. Commander Zavala
is
awesome.
Yeah.
Great choice. We were just talking about him. And, like, Dinklage was so out of place.
Yeah.
So I guess for me personally, I was so happy when they were like, we're getting rid of him. And sure, I understand the controversy of, like, how can they do this? He's already in the game. But I was like, good. We all wanted it. Well, a lot of people I felt like wanted it. So
I love
just
Nolan
to double
North,
check.
So.
Am I? It, like, I wanted him. It's perfect. I can't. Well, I hope that Nolan sounds right. That's the next question.
What if Nolan also like gives a weird performance?
He'll probably call it in, knowing that guy.
No, yeah, no, I'm not joking. Saying he'll call Nolan's it in. Awesome. But you're still playing awesome. A robot ghost. Like, is he going to be smarmy? But he's playing a robot.
Oh, he has a lot of the same lines.
Yeah, how does an actor address that challenge?
Actually, that's a really good question, but I have – that's one you'd have to ask Nolan North.
That line is still in there. That wizard came from the moon.
Didn't they remove that line? I think they removed
that line.
They
did. They did. Yeah. They took that out, and now they're taking out the inklings.
No one has done this for a long time.
I mean,
what's a crazy line that you can think of? They've awoken the hive.
Yeah. How many times do you have to hear that? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I am not for or against them removing or replacing. But this happens all the time, right? Like, if voice actors get replaced all the time in all sorts of mediums. It's not like, it's not as if this is unprecedented.
Actors get replaced. I mean,
it's... But, and even in Game of Thrones, where it's actually kind of like, that's a thing. But what is great is that Nolan North has been working in this particular medium as an expert, as an expert at the very highest level for many, many years. Like, if anyone's going to do a great job, it's this guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's probably, even if he is like the best in the business, he's probably way cheaper than Peter Dinklage. So
It's not about money in the end, though, like you said. I mean, I really feel confident that, look, here's what I think happened. Let's just go down that road.
Okay.
Because if I'm wrong, who cares? It's a fun story to play out. I think they were pushed to have this iconic person in the game.
Yeah.
It was a huge new franchise. And from the top, they had to find someone. They said, he's one of the hottest people out there.
Yeah.
Let's get him in there. And he got pushed in. And then it turned out, like, didn't have a lot of time with him. Maybe not the greatest to work with, and then they might have even needed pickups and stuff, and he's not available.
Yeah.
And so you go into, like, now year two.
And then if you're Peter Dinklage and they want more lines and you've had this huge backlash, he's like, no way.
Yeah, exactly.
I am not doing that.
And, maybe that's part of it, too, is he's like, nope, not. Maybe he didn't want to do more. But I really think it's more the other side, which they were just like, you know, I want to get out of that world as we go into year two and then three. You know, you need some consistency.
I'm excited.
So I'm curious to see if Nolan does his normal, you know, type of voice or if he tries to do something different. I always thought he mostly sounded, you know,
Sully.
Like Drake and so on. and Desmond.
Terrible.
And
terrible impression.
Yeah. I always thought he sounded like those characters. And he came into IGN once and he did like a Joker voice and it was like spot on.
He's great.
And, that'd be an interesting take if he has like a very particular voice for this.
Yeah. Part of me would have wanted to see them just really work closely with Dinklage to nail it and let him make it his own.
But both parties need to want that, you know. Who's your favorite voice talent in the game? I think mine's Petra Venge, thinking about it. She just has a lot of attitude, and I like how she delivers her lines.
You kind of got the hots for her, don't you? That's what this is about.
You like Eris? You like the bleeding eyes?
I think it has to be absolutely. Eris?
No, well, my favorite, but it's actually hard for me to choose, but you know, I'm a little biased.
There's an NPC in the tower for a future war cult that I love. Like, she's a voice actress that sounds a lot like Tali or from Mass Effect.
She does.
And, I really like her, but she just stands there and kind of mumbles to herself.
Well, you might, in the new Taken King, they talk a lot more cinematic, seeing what's going on at the tower. Maybe these characters are expanded.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I think seeing the faction leaders in cutscenes.
I mean, you already heard a lot more dialogue going on in the very first story mission, which, by the way, I got to play that for the first time at Gamescom today. You guys played it at
E3. Yeah.
But even in that, there's a lot more radio chatter going on. A
lot of banter, great banter between the characters. I'm excited to see more of that.
So I'm sure it's expanded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
and they've mentioned that a couple of times, that it is.
But the answer to this question, I think they have some great voices. I'm a little biased because I know Morla, who's Eris.
Yeah.
And she does awesome.
She's your favorite.
I actually, you know, funny story. I don't remember if I told
her. Do you want to call her?
I could.
It's like
she answers, Crota.
Yeah.
But anyway, I love her voice. Zavala is great. But actually, the queen. It was an awesome voice.
Yeah,
that's actually
a lot of powerful females in Destiny.
Yeah.
I was going to say my
favorite
is... But
I'm going to go with the queen, actually.
Okay.
Cool. Just such a cool
queen
sounding
of the
voice.
Reef.
Yeah.
Underutilized, too. How come when we go to the reef, she's behind this wall? Like, I want to go talk to her.
Well, maybe we'll get to
probably they couldn't get the voice actors for the BO. I don't know.
I would have to say mine is the speaker, only because the very first couple of lines, I was like, is this Bill Nighy? He sounds like Bill Nighy. But that's why. It's like, I don't like him. He's not my favorite because he's the best. I think he's my favorite because
there's
a lot of really funny lines that he delivers very flatly. Mm-hmm. Like, early on, when you first get into the story, he's like, I could tell you about this great war between the Traveler and, like, the darkness. And then I'm like, okay, tell me. And then he's just like, nope. He just goes on to himself.
No, wait.
He kind of always does that. And then there's this other one where it's like, Dinklebot's like, this is the speaker. He's broadcasting on all channels. And it's like, oh man, the speaker, he's talking to all guardians right now. This is going to be important. And he's like, we can't let them get this engine part. And I was like, oh my God, this is the worst. Like, that's why he's my favorite, because there are a lot of those moments in the campaign.
So you like his lines, though.
It's funny.
That's
yeah.
different than the voice.
No, but it's.
I was going for the sound. Yeah.
It's part and parcel, right? Like, it's the lines, but it's also the delivery. Like,
wow.
If it was a better delivery, maybe it wouldn't. It maybe would have landed better.
You know who else is really good? The Hunter Vanguard, because it's the dude from Firefly. Nathan Fillion.
I'm not a hunter.
Nathan Fillion
really
is the Hunter Vanguard.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Really?
Yeah, I forgot about
he
that.
He has some great one-liners down there.
Wait, right? Really? How did I not know this?
Yeah, just go down there and listen to him sometime.
No,
he has
a
lot of funny liners.
I have
liners.
A 34 Hunter.
Yeah,
but that's weird.
Well, you probably never go there because you just buy your gear and leave. You know?
That's
so
true.
You don't really hang out.
Maybe have not ever even talked
like,
to the Hunter.
I
Vanguard.
Would run down there and he'd be saying stuff, and it's like. What? Like, that's how they utilize this amazing
they have,
voice.
They
actor?
Have some great voices in the game. Yeah. Nobody's going to go with Lord Chex, huh? The Crucible. Yeah.
Who is that?
You're crushing it, Guardian.
Oh,
yeah,
that.
He's all right.
I have some beef with that dude because early on in Destiny when I was playing
I'll give
like,
him
Crucible,
the mercy
there'd be
role.
Like, he would say things like, it's almost over, or like, you've got this in the bag, and then I'd look
you've
and it's
got
like,
this, Guardian.
Yeah, he's like,
it's like 5,000.
Yeah, no, that, or like, you're 5,000 points away, or there was one where he was like, that's it, Guardian. Like, you're almost done. And then I look, and it's this close, and we are right at neck to neck. And I was like, I, like, let up for a second there.
Yeah.
Like, I gave up before the race was over.
Yeah.
And
then you lose.
I blame it on
cues.
That guy.
Yeah, okay.
Some of the cues are weird.
He's one of the people that you hear the most, though. I will say, at first, I was like, what is up with this, like, odd choice? This very, like, almost theatrical British voice for, like, the Crucible. You know, you're used to, like, Fragtastic.
Double kill.
Yeah. Double kill. Like, all that stuff.
They wanted to differentiate the product.
But... Yeah. Once I started playing, I was like, I love his voice in there. It's like a lot of fun. It's just the way the lines are, you know, put in. But anyway.
Well, yeah, now it kind of, I've gotten a handle on Crucible, but early on it threw me off when it was like, you're almost there. And then the 5 minutes left in the game still, you know, like.
Yeah, there's a lot of great voice talent. I'm excited to see what Nolan North does.
Can you guys do any impressions of any of the?
Oh, I am terrible. Impressions,
let's hear
one
impression from everyone. Pick one, and let's all
greetings,
do it.
Greetings, Guardian.
That's
Barracks.
Is that Barracks?
Trying my Barracks. All right, what do you got?
Oh, die. I'm not making fun of you. Fran, go first. I'm going to decide who to do.
Well, I already did
do
Aris. Zavala.
You want to do Aris.
No, I cannot do it. Obviously, I can't do Aris.
Actually, your
Zavala
was pretty good.
Yeah.
On the
I'll do that
one.
All right.
We've stepped into a war with the Cabal.
Wow, that's really
that's
good.
That's pretty good.
It's not that bad.
God, now I feel so embarrassed because I'm going to make a fool of myself. Who
that
am
was
I
the point.
Do? I'm going to channel my best Bill Nighy.
Message for Shax. Message for Shax.
That's a pretty easy one. Yeah. That's just a robot.
Sending failed, sending failed, sending
is that,
failed.
What
sending
is that?
Successful.
Is that the same postmaster?
Yeah, they'll say weird stuff like that all the time.
I'm going to do the Cryptarch. And I don't know the line, except he goes, now that's what a real Cryptarch can do. Or see what
really?
A real Cryptarch can do.
My Cryptarch's
the one in
the
reef.
The reef one. That's
the reef
I don't
one
know
is
him
pretty
that.
One snarky.
That, yeah.
I like his stuff.
This pretty is what good. A real Cryptarch can do. Nice. That's what he says.
What's
it,
regards
guys?
To your order, Guardian. That's my bad impression.
That?
That's my
one
bad
of the characters
of
in the tower.
It's the Cryptarch in the first tower. So.
Okay.
It's Rahul.
Yeah. That's all we have time for today. Thank you guys for joining us at Gamescom. Thank
my
you
pleasure.
For joining us also. Fran, do you want to do any plugs here at the end of the show?
No, I do too much every time. We're going to take a break on this one. We're all too tired for it. But you can find
definitely.
Me at Fran Mirabella on Twitter.
Sean?
I'm Finnegan.
It's been a long show.
Follow me on Twitter at I'm Finnegan. That's a little bit more clear.
I'm at Destin Legarry, and until next time, Guardians out.
I should have had you guys do Guardians out.
Guardians out?
That's
Guardians
our end
out.
Of the show. Yeah. Oh, that would have been a good idea, Destin.
It's too late now.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.